Episode 66 for March 20th, 2007.
This is Golf Smarter. Each week, we tap the minds of PGA and USGA course pros, architects, authors, and teaching gurus to provide you with tips, drills, insights, and advice so that you can lower your scores. Golf Smarter is brought to you by Edwin Watts Golf, golf's most trusted retailer since 1968. Here's your host, Fred Green.
Welcome and thank you for downloading the Golf Smarter podcast once again. Obviously, I'm experimenting with a new introduction to the show because some of you have asked me to. You say that you're not sure what shows you've heard and what you haven't, so when you want to know just as soon as you start listening if it's something that you've done before. So when I started this podcast over a year ago, my friend Leo Laporte, who hosts a number of very popular computer podcasts, told me to make sure that you put the title and the date at the head of the show. Well, I felt that since the content of Golf Smarter was timeless, the date really didn't matter. Obviously, since we've introduced the Edwin Watts Golf giveaways, all that has changed. So now we have a choice of a couple ways to go. I can do the show number and date, like we just did, or as usual, the name and title of the guest. And I'm going to just let you decide. Send me an email and let me know what you think, and we'll figure out the results and make it happen. I can use an online survey program, but we'll get into that as the new website launches. But now, just go ahead and send me an email. Golf Smarter is brought to you in part by the Bird Golf Academy. As I told you last week, I went down to Arizona with my wife for 3 days at the Bird Golf Academy. And I got to tell you, if you want to take your game to the next level, the quality of instruction is ultimate. I just had a fabulous time, and my wife became a golfer, and now she's hooked, and she's never played on a course before. Another bonus while I was there, Kerry Mumford was visiting. He does work with Bird Golf Academy, and he spent an hour with me on the range teaching me the clear key system. Oh my gosh, does that work? It's really remarkable. It just takes your head out of thinking all the different thoughts and makes you swing the club so effortlessly and cleanly. You hit the ball well. So go back and listen to the Kerry Mumford interview. We'll have him on again, but go back and listen to that one and see if it does help you, in fact. I really did want to interview my teacher, and I told you I would, but Anne-Marie Polly, who is my instructor, she just refused to talk about herself. Every time I brought up the idea of doing an interview, she's like, eh, she didn't want to do it. And it's a real shame because she has great stories about life on the LPGA Tour. Anyway, check out the Bird Golf Academy by checking out their link at golfsmarterpodcast.com. And remember, as a listener to the Golf Smarter Podcast, you receive an exclusive 10% discount to the Bird Golf Academy. Now, in today's program, Kenny Nicholson will answer questions about stock shafts, choosing the right ball for women and kids, and will pick a winner for the Bridgestone J33 Hybrid and announce a new giveaway. I recently received an email from Gordon Searless in Lakewood, Washington, who says, "You have convinced me that there is value in listening to a pro talk about their course, even if I will never play it. In fact, I'm going back and listening to every one of the previous podcasts. For me, it is about understanding how the different architects design their courses and the general course designs. How do architects approach, trick, or tempt a golfer into taking the risky route instead of a smarter route?" So he's planning on ordering the Robert Trent Jones Jr. book on course design, which I do highly recommend. With that in mind, I'm going to Arizona here. Our guest today is the general manager of the Weekapaw Golf Course in Phoenix, Arizona. And before the weather gets too painful in the desert, I thought I'd feature some of the courses down there. And we're going to do more than a tee tour of the course. We'll get some instruction, drills, tips on how to take advantage of your time when you're playing one of these great courses. So, Jeff Lessig, general manager of Weekapaw Golf Course, welcome.
Fred, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm doing just fine. How's the weather in Arizona? What a stupid question, but while...
Well, I don't know if it's a stupid question, but it's, you know, it's pretty predictable weather here. Today's a little overcast, but about 80 and very pleasant.
Well, Arizona golf has really become a great destination for springtime from people all over the world, hasn't it?
Well, I think so. I think the Scottsdale and the greater Phoenix market has worked very, very hard at promoting the destination. You know, there are a lot of different domestic golf destinations for people to get to from the, you know, southeastern part of the country and the west. And You know, we very much recognize that we're in competition here with other destinations from around the country, and I think the Scottsdale area has done a good job of putting itself on the map as one of the premier destinations in the country.
And the Phoenix-Scottsdale area is just growing like wildfire, and I don't want to use the word for Arizona wildfire, but you get my point. I mean, it's really growing rapidly, isn't it?
It is growing rapidly. I think Phoenix now is the fifth largest city in the nation, which is, over the last 10 years, I don't know where they were 10 years ago, but I know that the growth has been rapid here without doubt, and golf has grown along with it.
And you're not local from Arizona?
Me personally?
Correct.
I'm from Ohio originally, so I'm a transplanted Buckeye and been out here in Arizona now about 22 years.
Oh, okay. Well, we have one listener whose email address is Buckfan, and I know he's from Ohio, so he says hello.
All right. Very good.
So in the amount of time that you've been in Arizona, you've probably seen a dramatic change, not only in the people and the area itself, but the quality of the golf courses.
Oh, just an incredible change, yes. I mean, when I first moved out here, desert golf was just beginning. My first job in Arizona was at Desert Highlands Golf Club back in 1984 as an assistant professional. At that time, Desert Highlands was hosting the first two skins games, the first two televised skins games with Nicklaus and Palmer and Watson and Player. And desert golf as a genre, if you will, in golf was just beginning at that time. And Desert Highlands, the exposure that Desert Highlands got in the in that desert golf environment was a real eye-opener for me and for a lot of other people, too. It just didn't really exist as a sort of a style of golf, if you will. And, geez, in the 22 years, I guess, it's been since then, desert golf has just exploded out here with all kinds of, top-rated golf courses and very high-quality venues.
And what makes desert golf so attractive?
Well, it's just like it's the thing that makes golf attractive around the world. It's the venue that you're playing in. It's that place that you're playing in, whether that's seaside golf in Scotland or Ireland, or whether it's parkland style golf in the heartland of our country, or whether it's golf on the west coast of the United States. And this is just a golf in its own native environment. It just happens to be in the Southwest and in the Sonoran Desert, and that's what gives it the game of golf, I think, its appeal. It's just that it's no two courses are the same, and all the different environments that golf can be played in just make the game great.
Is it easier to play, with less humidity, which is obviously one of the great attractions to Arizona golf, and especially in the springtime when the weather is just so appealing, when you're in the upper 80s and stuff, and it's the dry heat that everyone talks about in Arizona.
Yeah.
But does that make golf easier for the average golfer?
I don't think really it makes it any easier. I think it might make it a little bit more pleasant to play in as opposed to the humidity of the Southeast or the Midwest or something like that. I think it just makes the playing conditions a little more pleasant. But I think that when you first play desert golf, I think that what most people experience is just the intimidation factor of the desert. They look out at that ribbon of green fairway, and while it might be wider than their home course back in the Midwest, just that stark contrast between that green fairway and the surrounding desert is very intimidating to people sometimes. And I think there's just a little bit of a learning curve or an intimidation factor that people have to get past when they first play desert golf. So, I don't think it's any easier or any harder. It's just, like any other environment, whether it's seaside golf or anything else, it's just a different environment to play in.
Well, one of the more obvious things when you walk onto a desert course like that is the lack of big, lush trees, right?
Yeah, exactly. You've got, out here in Arizona, we've got the long views, if you will. The horizon is not obstructed by a lot of tall trees. And so you've got, just long distance views in a lot of directions in many cases. And, it's just a different look, a different style, if you will.
Hmm. But let's focus now. Let's talk about Weekapa, which when you talk about the top rated courses in Arizona, that one, whether it gets it in print or not, people talk about Weekapa frequently.
Well, we hope so. I think we've got a beautiful venue here. I think it it really begins with just the choice piece of property that our two golf courses are on. We're fortunate to be in an environment without development. There are no homes around the golf courses, no roads that go through the golf course. It's just 18 holes laid out in pristine desert, and with just stunning views in almost every direction. And that, the success of the golf course, the attraction of the golf course, begins with the piece of land that we have here to work with.
I think that if any listener has been familiar with your course in the past, their ears must have just perked up when you said two courses.
Yes, the facility is just a little more than 5 years old now, and the original golf course at Wecopah was designed by Scott Miller, and it's been very, very successful over the years. And yes, we just added a brand new 18 holes that opened, well, in December of 2006. So as we speak today, it's just a little bit more than 2 months old.
Wow.
And that golf course was designed by, or has been designed by, Bill Coore and Ben Crenshaw. And it's off to a wonderful start.
And what is the difference between the two courses? Obviously, you have different designers. How does that manifest itself?
In almost every way that it can manifest itself. Just about everything about the two golf courses is different. It really is. From the way the golf courses are routed, first of all, to the entire philosophy of design is entirely different. From the way the tees are constructed, to the way the fairways are laid upon the land, to the style of the greens, the bunkers, the cart paths, just about everything is different between the two golf courses other than the land that is, native here. I mean, the property, the site for the two different golf courses is very, very similar. It's just that the style of architecture is quite different.
Well, we have some time. Let's play with that. Let's talk about and let's study what those differences are. Let's start with the philosophy. When you talk about the philosophy of design, what does that mean?
Well, I think not that one is right and one is wrong, but just Scott
philosophy,
Miller's,
there's no right and wrong, correct?
No, exactly. Well, there are preferences, and I think we, with our two golf courses here, what we didn't want was 36 holes of the same thing, and we certainly ended up with two very, very different 18-hole golf courses. The new golf course is, I guess this might be a little bit trite, a little bit of a trite word, but it's very minimalistic in its design philosophy. Mr. Coore and Mr. Crenshaw's idea was to move as little ground as possible in the construction of this golf course, and in fact, you can make a case that no ground was moved in the construction of this golf course. It was simply routed and cleared, and the fairways and greens were located on this piece of property, and the undulation to the terrain out there is 100% natural. It's literally just golf that's laid upon the ground out there. And the greens, the greens are just incredible. Again, just laid on the ground. The green, there's no real drop-off from on the sides of the greens, if you will. I mean, in other words, there are recovery shots that are that you have the potential for on that golf course that you just don't on most golf courses just because of the way the greens are constructed.
And is the rough thick? Is it, it's new, so you're obviously still working with the topography there. Is it make it more difficult, or is you have a lot of thick rough?
On the Coore Crenshaw golf course, there really is no rough to speak of. Almost the entire golf course is mowed almost at one height. We have one little rough cut that's probably a half inch to an inch longer than the fairway cut, but in essence, there really is no rough on the golf course at all. The golf course is built with being able to play shots along the ground in mind as much as being able to play shots through the air. And that's, again, by design and by the philosophy of Bill Coore and Ben Crenshaw. You can bump and run shots and as well as pitch shots onto greens. And the natural undulation and roll of the land makes that possible. And the fact that it's very closely mowed around the greens makes that possible. I mean, it's not unusual to be able to putt the ball from, 10 or 15 yards off the green.
Is that similar to, how they do in Scotland?
Yeah, very much so. Very much so. And it's was designed to be played firm and fast, much like what you're describing in Scotland. I certainly wouldn't, equate it with Scottish golf. But that's the idea, yes, that shots can be played from off the green and sometimes that's the only shot that you have is to sort of bump the ball along or putt the ball from off the green.
What are the common mistakes that you see that players are making on this course when they see it for the first time?
Well, I think that is a common mistake, what I just described. I think most players, they feel like they're, you know, inside 100 yards, and the only shot that they have is to take a lofted club, a sand wedge or something, and pitch the ball or, you know, throw the ball up into the air. But the way the greens are constructed here, the bounce and roll in some of these greens, maybe the second time around, that player might choose to play a different kind of shot, because just with the undulations to the green and the green surrounds, it's probably sometimes not the most advisable shot to hit.
So it's more like force of habit. It's like, and maybe it doesn't take one hole to figure that out. It may take five or six, right?
Hopefully, I think for the more perceptive players, you're exactly right. They're able to figure this out maybe the first time that they look at the first hole, and they figure out, you know what, there might be more than one way to play this shot. Hmm. And, you know, that's one of the charms and one of the things about the golf course.
Well, walk me through your favorite hole. Give me a shot by shot. Let's take a little detour here of your favorite hole on the set, on the new course. And what are the difference in the names, so we know which to refer them to?
Well, the facility is Wecopaw Golf Club. Wecopaw, by the way, is a Native American term that is refers to a mountain range that we have out here called Four Peaks. And so Wecopaw is just the native pronunciation of the mountain out here that's known as Four Peaks. But the two golf courses, the original golf course designed by Scott Miller is called the Choya Golf Course. And the new golf course of Mr. Gore and Mr. Crenshaw is called the Saguaro Golf Course. And those are just the names of a couple of prominent cactus out here in the desert, something you're going to get stuck with when you stray off the fairways.
Saguaro.
Saguaro is the sort of quintessential statement cactus here in Arizona.
Yeah, yeah. So give me, again, a detour of your favorite hole on Saguaro.
Well, I was hoping you weren't going to ask me this question.
Have you not played the course yet?
I've played the course numerous times.
Okay.
But to name a favorite hole, boy, there's so many good ones out there. And I know that probably to the listener sounds a little overused too, but truly there's quite a collection of holes out there. Saguaro is about 6,900 yards long from all the way back, and it's got a real collection of different short par fours, long par fours, and quite a variety to the length of the par threes. But a couple of my favorite holes, I would have to say the second hole is probably among my favorite holes out there. Number two on the Saguaro Golf Course plays only 316 yards, and it is drivable or borderline drivable. But, as with most short fours, you've got to hit a truly accurate tee shot if you're going to use a driver. For my game and for my taste, I think for me I hit some sort of a hybrid club to the middle of the fairway and leave myself somewhere under 100 yards into the green. But the challenge begins and ends with the way this green is constructed. It's got a large hump on the front left part of the green, and it doesn't matter where you're playing from, that hump is going to come into play. And you just have to see the hole to really understand it. But I had Mr. Coor tell me one day that hump on the front left portion of that green dictates the play of the hole all the way back to the tee, and he couldn't be more right. You just really have to know what position to put yourself in and what kind of shot you're going to be able to play into that green. And, to describe it in this instance just doesn't do it justice. You just have to see it.
I can imagine that people walk off number 18 and go, I have to play this again.
Yeah, I think so. It really is something that you need to experience a couple of different times to learn the nuances of the golf course. And, I mean, I've played it, a dozen times, and I'm still learning a lot about the bounce and roll on this golf course. It's just charming to be able to play different shots day after day after day on the same holes. You mentioned number 18. The 18th hole is a 508-yard par 4, just a heroic finishing hole. I mean, you just need to hit a real, real solid drive up to the top of a kind of a steep hill. And then, obviously, at 508 yards in par 4, you've got a long shot into the green as well. So, those are just two examples of the holes on Saguaro that are, they play quite differently, very different lengths. But you're going to, again, sounds trite, but you will use every club in your bag.
And a 508 par 4, is that going uphill or downhill?
Well, the tee shot's actually uphill just a little bit, but you have to carry your tee shot sort of over the crest of this little hill, and if you're able to do that, you're going to gain a little bit of a roll if you hit your tee shot in the right place. But, it's just an absolutely heroic-looking finishing hole to the Saguaro Golf Course.
with the lack of rough that you have in this course, are the fairways a bit more narrow than you'd normally see?
No, as a matter of fact, I think they might be just a little bit wider than you'd normally see. Now, again, I think that Coren Crenshaw have done a good job of allowing a fairway or giving you the turf that you need based on the kind of shot and the length of shot that you need to hit. You know, when you're required to hit a little bit longer shot, the fairways are a little bit more generous. And, you know, when you're maybe not required to hit such a long club, it gets a little tighter. So I think they've done a tremendous job with that.
That's really interesting. And is the course fairly flat, or is there a lot of undulation all the way through? I guess my question is it a walking course, or do you need to take a golf cart?
Well, it is built. That was the one thing that we asked of Mr. Coren and Mr. Crenshaw, was make this conducive to walking, and they have done just that. It is built with walking in mind. We don't require people to walk. I mean, you certainly can take a golf cart if you wish, but the course was built to be friendly to walking, and you know, they've succeeded famously at that. I mean, in most cases, you'll walk right off the green and right on to the next tee. And, you know, to facilitate walking, we actually have a fleet of Sun Mountain Speed e-carts, which are battery-powered push carts. And so you don't have to carry your clubs if you want to walk. You certainly can carry your clubs, but we also offer, as I said, a battery-powered push cart to carry your clubs around for you.
Awesome. I've not heard of that, but I mean, I know that you can get a pull cart, a two-wheel or a three-wheel push cart. I know that there's another course in the Arizona area that you can do segways.
Right.
I think they're the only ones that offer that. But being able to rent an e-cart so you can walk is a great idea.
Yeah, you have your choice. You can take a traditional golf cart, you can take one of the Sun Mountain speed carts, or you can carry your own bag. And it's something that I think for us is a bit of an experiment, but so far it's been a successful experiment. People that enjoy walking and feel like that's part of the game, I think, really appreciate it. The speed carts are real easy to use. I mean, it's very intuitive the way that they're designed and in the way that they're used. And it's just a real pleasure to use those things. You know, you don't have to. There's no effort involved at all.
How long is a round take on the Saguaro?
Well, that's been one of the pleasant side benefits, I guess you'd say, of the way the golf course is constructed. With being built with walking in mind and having the greens and tees located close together, you know, we're able to play golf around that golf course in 4 hours, 4 hours and 15 minutes is pretty normal for us.
That's great for desert golf.
Oh, it really is.
I'm sure you guys get backed up in April, May, March, April, May time, and to be able to get out in less than four and a half hours is a real bonus.
Yeah, I think for us on the Saguaro golf course, probably 4 hours and 15 minutes is about an average speed of play over there. So it has been wonderful. It really has. It's very easy to get around.
And how's the press been treating the course?
Well, quite frankly, I don't know that we could have asked for anything more. Just about the time the golf course opened, Golf Magazine named the Saguaro course one of the 10 best new golf courses in the country.
Wow.
And that was a very pleasant surprise and situation for us. We were featured in the January issue of Golf Magazine, and then since then there have been a number of other articles and nice things that have been said about the Saguaro course, and hopefully that will continue. It has gotten off to a wonderful start with the golf press.
Wow, that's great. I was curious, as far as yardage markers or GPS to help speed the pace of play, how do you do that there?
Well, you know, we're sort of, I guess you'd call us, maybe this is the anti-technology golf course. There's no GPS on this golf course, nor do we intend to introduce GPS to the golf course. The course is very well marked, and we just don't feel it's necessary. It's, with the environment that we're in out here, I just think that the less intrusive we are on the golf course with anything man-made, whether it's signage or GPS or any of those sort of things, just sort of, in our mind, I think detracts from the experience out there rather than adds to it. So I guess for your listeners that are, technology buffs or something that want to play golf, we will probably disappoint those people because we just do not have, nor do we feel like we need, GPS on these golf courses, either one of them for that matter.
So. Well, if I could speak for the team, the Golf Smarter team, we are all early adopters or we wouldn't be listening to podcasts.
Well, I'm sorry to disappoint you.
We like our toys. Come on.
I understand.
We want more toys to carry with us in our bag and weight it down another 10 pounds. We got to have the iPod, and we got to have the GPS system, and oh yeah, the cell phone. And the I was talking to somebody yesterday who told me that at this private course they have banned cell phones for employees as well as every guest that comes out there. Now this is a private course where I'm sure a lot of business generally would get done. They have banned cell phones. I was shocked. You may go, oh yeah, we've done that too, but
no. Well, we haven't taken that step so far.
I've never heard of anything like that.
Purely a public golf course. Actually, I've heard of that. I have heard of that at private clubs. That it's just I don't know how effective they are at enforcing it, but I have definitely heard of those types of policies being implemented at private clubs.
I was blown away. I mean, the rule that I have heard and appreciate and adhere to is if your phone rings, that's one stroke. If you answer it, it's two strokes. And if you initiate a call, you lose the hole.
Well, see, if we could institute that policy, I think we'd all be better off, Fred.
Let's talk about the old course, the Troya course, a little bit, and because it's going to be hard to get your favorite hole on this too. But let's talk about the design that Scott Miller has done here and how it differs from the Saguaro course.
Well, it is really quite different, and I think that Scott did a terrific job of locating the greens on the Troya golf course. And what his philosophy was, or the way it seems anyway, most of the greens are located in the low areas of the golf course. In other words, they're sort of tucked in the little canyons and arroyos and near washes and low spots on this sort of gently rolling terrain. And so on a lot of holes, you really do have the feeling like your approach shot is being hit downhill, that you're sort of above the level of the green, and you've got the entire target right out there in front of you, and that most of the time you just feel like your approach shots into the greens are being hit downhill, and that's very cool. It really is. I mean, you've got a great view of the target, and he just did a terrific job of locating the greens in areas like that. And as, again, contrasting with the Saguaro golf course, a lot of the greens on the Saguaro are actually more on the high ground. And you're playing, not that you're playing uphill shots, but that the green sites are sort of located on the edges of ridges and on the tops of little knolls and things like that. And, again, that's by design. But if I can say anything for the Troya course that Scott designed, is just the green locations are just superb. He just did a great job of locating the greens on that golf course. Troya now is a little bit longer than the new course. Troya course plays 7,225 yards as opposed to the Saguaro course, which is just a little more than 6,900 yards. And, again, gorgeous views in all directions. And if there's one thing I think that we take more pride in than anything else is just course condition out here. I think that's job one for us. And take a lot of effort to make sure the golf course is just in spectacular condition all the time.
Well, isn't the management company you guys are involved with OB Sports?
Yes, it is. OB Sports, you bet.
And so, yeah, their courses generally are quite well maintained, correct?
Well, I think so. I hope so. That, again, for us, I know that's just job one. We feel like if we can do that, we're going to satisfy all the customers, with just supreme course condition. And so, again, we do spend a lot of time and a lot of effort to make sure that those conditions are what our guests expect.
I love the idea that you say there's no houses on the course. And that's pretty different for an Arizona course.
Yeah, it really is. We're just blessed with the site that we have here. And you're right, there is no development around this golf course, nor will there ever be. It's just a residential. Real estate is just not going to happen here on this golf course, and we're certainly the beneficiaries of that, and it is a differentiating, I guess, factor for us with some of the competition that we have around here. Most of the courses in this area are, the centerpieces of either residential or commercial real estate development, and we're just not one of those courses.
So with Troya, you're 100 yards out. You are going to want to fly the ball into the green? different than Saguaro?
Yeah, I think so. The greens are just, you know, the greens on Choi are just sort of perched up a little bit, as opposed to the Saguaro course where they're just literally laid flat on the ground. And so, yeah, usually if you miss a green on the Choi course, you've got some sort of a little pitch or, you know, bunker shot, you know, more, I would call it more traditional style of golf course architecture than the Saguaro course is.
So the strategy is completely different from the player's perspective.
Yeah, I think so. There aren't, on Choya, there just are not a lot of run-up shots that you can hit. Just, the, again, not that one's right and one's wrong, but just I would call the Choya course a more modern style of golf course architecture, and I would call the Saguaro golf course, the newer one, ironically, more of a classic style of golf course architecture, more old school.
So for the visitors who are coming out and trying to plan their day, this is a good 36 right here.
Well, we hope so. That was certainly the idea, that you can play two really different golf courses here in the same day and, you know, hit literally every club in your bag and have two just great golf experiences, though quite different.
What about the amount of water that's going to come into play on these courses?
Well, on the Saguaro golf course, the new golf course, there is no water at all. Again, in keeping with the theme of just this just being the most natural, uncontrived golf experience that you can have, you know, Coore and Crenshaw weren't about to put a lake on a golf course that wasn't there naturally. And so that just isn't part of the Saguaro golf course. It's not part of the strategy of play at all. On the Choya golf course, there is really just one hole where water comes into play. That happens to be the 18th hole. So other than that, there are no water hazards on either golf course other than the one on the 18th hole of Choya.
Well, let's take a short tee tour of number 18 then on Choya. Give me a shot-by-shot guide of how to play that hole strategically to score the best way.
18 on Choya?
Yeah.
Well, it gives you a choice right off the tee, which I think is you know, indicative of any good golf hole. Is you know, you need to make a decision on the tee what you're trying to do. 18 on the Choya golf course is 439 from all the way back, and there's a cross bunker down the left-hand side of the fairway, and the decision that you need to make is whether you're going to try to hit driver and carry that cross bunker or not. The alternative would be to play out to the right and, you know, lay up with some sort of a three-wood or a long iron. But the whole gist of the hole is that if you decide to lay up and play a little safer off of the tee, you've got water to carry and a bunker to carry in order to get the golf ball onto the green, and you're probably hitting a 7 or an 8 iron as opposed to, you know, if you're successful at carrying that cross bunker off the tee, you've got no more than just a wedge or a 9 iron into the green with really no water or no sand to negotiate. So it's one of those holes that, like a lot of good golf holes, causes you to make a decision on the tee. And, you know, if you succeed in carrying that cross bunker and succeed with that risk, you're rewarded with a much easier shot into the green.
Well, we promote golf smarter here, so we're not going to force ourselves to do something we can't do.
Well, see, not everybody's as smart as you are, though, because I've seen so many people that probably make the wrong decision on that hole.
Well, we have thousands of smart people who are listening. At least we try to educate them to
start. Terrific.
Explain to me, I think I have a sense of what you're talking about when you say cross bunker, but let's make sure that I'm clear on your terminology.
Well, a cross bunker, simply as the name would suggest, is a bunker that sort of goes across the fairway and something that you need to carry in order to get, in order to get to the other side. It's typically a cross bunker is a bunker or a series of bunkers that bisect a fairway, that go horizontally across a fairway. And there are a number of great golf holes around the world where cross bunkers come into play, and both off the tee and as well as on par fives, on second shots on par fives, do I or don't I try to carry the cross bunkers? And so similar to what we have on the 18th hole of Choya, although it is off the tee.
And are those used as distractions or illusions in their design to kind of scare you out of trying to stay away from them, or do you use them as a target? I guess we'll be specific about this one on 18.
Well, there's nothing that's an illusion about this. I mean, it's right there in front of you. You just have to decide whether or not you've got the game to carry that thing or not. Mm-hmm. And, mm-hmm. That's all there is to it. It's a choice that you need to make on that tee. And, you know, if the thing is, the penalty for not carrying it is can be severe. So now all of a sudden, if you don't carry that bunker, you're, you know, something somewhere in the neighborhood of 170 yards from the green in a bunker. And, you know, that's no fun. So
quickly, give me a great practice drill for playing out of the sand on an Arizona golf course or on a Weekapaw golf course.
Well, I think the best tip I can tell you is to avoid getting in the sand in the first place.
You're a lot of help.
Take a lesson from your local PGA professional so you don't go in that bunker in the first place. But no, you know, I don't think playing out of the sand in the Arizona desert is any different typically than playing out of the sand anywhere else. What is different in Arizona is playing out of the desert. You know, when you happen to hit your golf ball into the desert, that requires a little bit more of a specialty shot than playing out of a formal bunker.
How so?
Well, you know, in the Arizona desert, the ground is very, very hard, and typically there's just the native decomposed granite that's part of that surface. And if you're going to play a shot out of the desert, just like any trouble shot in golf, you pretty much have to play it back in your stance and just make sure that you hit ball first before you hit the ground. You know, if you hit a shot out of the desert that's even just the slightest bit fat, the ball's just not going to go anywhere. So just like any trouble shot in golf, whether it's deep rough, for instance, you know, you want to play the ball back in your stance and make sure that you make a descending blow into it and hit the golf ball first. And it's the same in the Arizona desert. If you're playing a shot out of the desert, you just got to make sure you hit ball first. And typically that means, you know, the club's going to be de-lofted just a little bit. The ball might go a little farther than it normally does and things like that. So,
great. Thank you. Thank you. Sure. Now, tell me, where exactly is Weekapaw located in the Phoenix area?
Weekapaw is located on the eastern edge of the metropolitan Phoenix area, east of Scottsdale, on land that is owned by the Fort McDowell Yavapai Nation. And we're literally located in Fort McDowell, Arizona, which is adjacent to the small town of Fountain Hills, which in turn is adjacent to Scottsdale. We're about, no more than 30 minutes from Phoenix Sky Harbor International Airport, and from downtown Scottsdale, probably 20 or 25 minutes.
Okay.
So it is pretty conveniently located. We're just on the outskirts of the metropolitan area.
And how far in advance can we make a tee time?
Tee times can be made 90 days in advance here at Weekapaw, either online or by calling the golf shop.
And to go online, what website are we trying to find?
Yeah, your audience is going to go online, aren't they?
Absolutely.
Our website is www.weekapaw.com. It's just weekapaw.com.
P as in Peter.
Yes.
Okay. And phone number? Let's make sure we're efficient. Because they use cell phones, too.
We'll have them program this number in there.
Okay.
It's area code 480-836-9000.
One more time.
480-836-9000.
Okay. I wrote it down, too. Hey, Jeff, thanks so much for your time. I appreciate it, and congratulations on the new course, and best of luck in the future. And if a Golf Smarter listener calls up and says, hey, I heard about you on Golf Smarter, you going to give him a little love there?
Give him a little love, and I'll let you know.
Okay. All right. Jeff Lessig is the general manager of the Weekapaw Golf Course. Thanks so much for your time.
Fred, I appreciate being on the program. Thank you.
It's time to Ask Kenny. Do you have a question about specific golf gear or are baffled about what to look for in a category of golf products? Kenny Nicholson, sales manager at edwinwattsgolf.com, would like to help. If we use your question on the show, you'll receive a free Golf Smarter Edwin Watts Golf hat. To submit your question, send an email to fred@golfsmarterpodcast.com with the subject, Ask Kenny. Ask Kenny is brought to you by Edwin Watts Golf and edwinwattsgolf.com, golf's most trusted retailer since 1968. Kenny Nicholson, how are you?
I'm good, Fred. How are you doing today?
I'm doing really well. Just got back from golf school and had a blast with that and ready to spend more money.
What'd they teach you?
That your swing sucks. It was interesting because I had an instructor who is a highly decorated French female player, been on the LPGA for years, and very interesting. I mean, I learned a lot, and I went in thinking, you know, I just need to do that and tweak this and tweak that, and she just had me start from scratch. She just beat me up.
And sometimes that's the hardest thing to do.
Oh, man. It really is. But I'm determined to make it work because I could have just avoided the whole thing and just gone through and kept my scores where they are, or work at it and try to improve my scores. And I think that's what I wanted to do.
Yeah, the one thing about lessons you need to remember, Fred, is that the majority of the time when you get a lesson, you're going to get worse before you get better. And that's the whole thing about it, just because you're trying to change a whole swing.
Mm-hmm.
And if you stick with it, in the end result is going to be you're going to be a better golfer with a better swing.
Okay.
But sometimes you have to take a step backwards before you take, two steps forward. So just keep that in mind. Keep a positive attitude.
Well, part of what I learned as well is I think the source of my back problems. I had this whole body shift when I swung the club as opposed to rotating around my spine. And I think that may have contributed to some of my pain. So I know that, playing 3 days of golf for 6-7 hours a day, I wasn't in pain, and that's rare for me. So
it's called a sway.
Yeah, it's called bad.
Sway is
so
bad.
So that's why you were laughing at me when we played together. Okay.
I'd never give a lesson on a course.
Good for you, and I do the same because I went to the school with my wife, and I've vowed never to try to instruct her on anything because who am I to give instructions? Well, speaking of France, nice segue, Fred. Our first question comes from Fabrice Levy, who's in Paris, France, enjoys the program, and says here in France there are only 2 or 3 places and no more that he can get a spot on a launch monitor, and it's even harder for somebody who's left-handed. But he did get one, and his fittings said that the driver, for him to get a more penetrating flight, that he would benefit from a 9.5-degree driver as opposed to his 10.5-degree. And he wants to know, is it important to wear the same shaft on the driver and the 3-wood? And what do you think of the X460 Callaway Tour driver 9.5 degree with the Fujikura 26.3 TP stock shaft?
That's a lot in that question.
I know, and I'm exhausted.
Yeah, what he poses is a very good question. And I'll touch base real quick on, is it important to wear the same shaft in the driver that you do the 3-wood? And I'll say this in leading into that question. Weights in shafts vary from a driver to a 3-wood. Anytime a shaft gets shorter in a golf club, that shaft gets heavier, okay, in order to keep the overall total weight of the golf club the same. So a driver being 45.5 inches, they have to use a lighter weight shaft. Typically, it's anywhere from 60 to 65 or 67 grams. And in a fairway wood, it's typically around 75 grams. Because a fairway wood is shorter, they have to use a heavier shaft. So the answer to his question is easy. No, it's not important to keep the same shaft or brand shaft in a driver that you do a 3-wood. Typically, what you'll find is the majority of golfers out there don't have the same brand. I know myself, I use an Aldila NV shaft in my driver. And I use a Fujikura shaft in my 3-wood. Why? Because that particular shaft performs better in that golf club. So what you need to do is you need to try to find a shaft that fits you. He was able to get on a launch monitor and find which shaft fit his swing the best in his driver. That particular shaft is not going to marry the 3-wood the way that it is the driver because the weights are going to be totally different. So, no, you do not need to get the same brand shaft. It definitely will not be the same weight because the golf club would be way too light for you, and it would feel totally out of character for the rest of your set.
All right. Good job, Fabrice, for sending in that question because that was an interesting answer. Good job, Kenny. Speaking of good job, here's one.
Steve, I want to touch base real quick on his last question. There was
oh,
the
I'm
X460,
sorry.
Yeah, the X460 Tour 9.5 with the Fujikura stock shaft, Fujikura mm-hmm. TP. Real quick, when a manufacturer builds a golf club, they go to the shaft manufacturers and say, "Hey, here's our golf club. Make a shaft that you think performs best in this golf club." So they'll have a plethora of golf clubs out there with various shafts. They'll go to Iron Byron or any other machine to test the golf club to where they're compared apples to apples and oranges to oranges. We've got the exact same swing speed with this shaft as we do with the next shaft. Whichever shaft performs best in that golf club is typically the one that they're going to use for a stock shaft. years ago, a lot of manufacturers went with the most inexpensive shaft to be able to bring the cost of the golf club down to the consumer. What they've been able to do is tell the shaft manufacturers, hey, we need a shaft that is very, very good, but we need it at a certain price point to be able to keep it in the consumer's hands at a relatively reasonable price. So, in essence...
So they forced the hand with the manufacturer of the
shaft.
Well,
I wouldn't say force the hand, because the shaft manufacturer is getting their name out there. You know, if a club's mass-produced and it has their shaft in it, obviously Fujikura is a name that a lot of people might not have known years ago, but now everybody knows because it's in a lot of stock golf clubs.
Sure.
That particular shaft outside of that golf club might cost the consumer $150 just for the shaft. I mean, it's that good of a shaft, okay? But being mass-produced and put in a stock golf club, they're able to drive the cost down for the consumer. So the word stock shaft does not mean inexpensive or cheap. Every manufacturer out there that uses that manufacturer's shaft in their golf club, I can tell you right now, is a very good shaft. It's the one that performed best in that golf club under normal testing. Now, is it going to be the best shaft for you? It's hard to say until you get on a launch monitor, but I can tell you right now that the shafts that are in those golf clubs are very, very good. And the majority of the time, it's going to fit 90% of the golfers out there.
Hmm. So it's a pretty safe bet to go with the shaft that comes on the club.
It is. Anytime you deviate from that, you're going to deviate from the performance of the golf club. The club manufacturer is saying is, hey, guys, listen, this is the shaft that works best. We'd like for you to use it. If you want to use something different, you need to make sure.
It's going to change the performance of the club.
It absolutely it is. But, you know, to each his own. I don't always stick with the stock shaft, but the majority of the time when we go to the golf course and get on a launch monitor, that shaft's performing extremely well.
Wow, that's really valuable information.
So hopefully that helps understand the word stock definitely does not mean inexpensive.
Okay, great. Again, thank you, Fabrice, for clearing that up for everybody. That's really good. So Steve Hamilton of Lawrenceburg, Indiana, has an interesting question, too, and a comment. His question, he says, I've recently gotten my wife and kids, who are 10 and 12, into golf, and we're all beginners. Needless to say, we lose just a couple of balls every round. So he wants to know, is there a good, all-around, easy-to-get-it-up-in-the-air type of ball that they can all use that won't cost that won't cost more than the green fees when he's paying for four people for golf? Or should he just buy a specific type for his wife, one for the kids, and one for himself? He wants to know what you recommend. He also wanted to say that he loves the segment with you, and he says, hats off to you guys. Wait a minute. Since my hat's off, can I get a new one?
Steve, you're in luck today, my friend.
So what do you have to say to him?
Golf balls vary in skill ability. And typically what you find is whoever has a slower swing speed, i.e. being his wife or his child, that are 10 and 12, their swing speeds are going to be quite a bit lower than my swing speed or his swing speed. So what you find is you have a golf ball that has a lower compression, okay, which means that you don't have to hit it as hard in order to compress the golf ball, so it's going to come off the club face faster than a golf ball that's for somebody that has a higher swing speed. In essence, what he's going to get is he's going to get more trajectory, so he's going to get more air under the ball because they typically have more dimples, and he doesn't have to swing as hard to compress it. So for a child or for a lady, go with a higher or a lower compression golf ball. So Precept makes a ladies line. The majority of manufacturers out there make a ladies line golf ball. That ball is going to perform better for them, and it's going to be less expensive, somewhere in the $15 to $20 range per dozen versus $25 to $40 per dozen for a more expensive golf ball. I think for a child or a lady or a person that's out there learning how to play the game, it's not fun to go out there and lose $40 worth of golf balls. So
no.
There are less expensive golf balls out there that still have, in my opinion, a soft feel. I like a softer feeling golf ball, not one that is very, very hard like a rock. So typically, a lower compression ball is going to have a little bit softer feel, but it's going to explode off the club face. So he can go with there's kids' golf balls out there that are available, but for most kids, he can get a ladies' golf ball also that's going to feel and perform well for that child. You know, U.S. Kids has what's called the champion ball, which is $19.99 per dozen, you know, as well. So yeah, very good question, but he can definitely use a ladies' golf ball or a U.S. Kids golf ball for that child.
And okay, great. There's no effect on the ball when it's a colored ball, is there?
No, none whatsoever.
That's just a matter of taste, right?
Exactly. It's a matter of preference. I mean, we get a lot of people that want yellow golf balls or orange golf balls just because they're easier to find.
Uh-huh. Well, I'll tell you, when I first started playing, the nine-hole course that I was playing at, the first fairway was adjacent to the driving range. So I always played a colored ball on the first hole because I always hit it up against the net, and there was always hundreds of balls there, and it made it easier to find my ball. I don't do that anymore. Cause I don't
imagine that wasn't your local country club right there.
Well, you know, it's no, I'm not a country club kind of guy. They wouldn't let me on. I show my Golf Smarter card, and they go, get out of here. All right, so those are two excellent questions. They will both receive hats, and those are superb answers. Mr. Nicholson, thank you so much. Do you want to give something away?
I absolutely do.
What would you like to give away?
We have our giveaway for this week we're going to do, which is an awesome product. I was actually at the driving range yesterday and tested it. It was the new MacTech McGregor NVG2 Fairway Wood. Awesome product. They use the same cut paste technology that they use in the driver. It comes stock with a Fujikura shaft, which we just talked about. Phenomenal low center of gravity, has weights on the heel and the toe at the bottom of the club to increase moment of inertia. It has weights on the heel and the toe of the golf club in order to increase moment of inertia, so you have less hooking and slicing of the golf ball. Gets the ball up extremely easy. I found it fun. I mean, I had a good time hitting it yesterday.
Awesome. Well, can you thank the people at McGregor for offering this to give away?
I've already done that, but I will again. Yes.
Well, you can tell them from me that I appreciate it. And apparently the manufacturers are starting to dig this, aren't they?
They are. They're wanting to get more involved, which is a good thing.
It's a good thing for everybody. We're not going to have to do this on a weekly – no, we're not going to do this on a weekly basis. It's not fair because people, we give them time to listen to the podcast. You don't always get to listen to the podcast immediately. Well, if you'd like to win the McGregor NVG2 Fairway Wood with a value of
$200.
Ooh. So if you'd like to win that McGregor NVG2 Fairway Wood, why don't you send an email with the subject McGregor to pickme@golfsmarterpodcast.com. And along with your email address, we reiterate, please include your name and shipping address so that we can send the prize to you when you win. For more information, check the show notes. The deadline for entries is midnight, April 2nd, and the winner will be announced on the program of April 3rd, 2007. But we have something else to give away because for the last 2 weeks, we've been asking people to send emails with the subject Bridgestone because we're giving away a Bridgestone J33 hybrid, correct?
That is correct. Somebody's going to win an awesome golf club.
And we have received, over a two-week period, we've received 124 entries. And what I'm also happy to say is 27 of those are first-time entries. I like to see that. As a matter of fact, of the first 13 entries that we got, 7 of them were brand new. I was like, wow, who are these people? Anyway, and I really appreciate it. So 124 entries. I have sorted them by last name. People are like, oh, good, you've changed it. And I may not do this ever again. I may go back to city. I may do first name. We never know. But I've sorted them by last name. There's 124 entries, and you get to pick the number. And many people are asking, go high, go low, go in the middle, keep going.
They're wanting to go all over the board.
They really do because they want to be selected. And you're going to select whom?
I'm going to go with 101.
101 lives in Plano, Texas, and it is Jason Starnes.
Congratulations,
of
Jason.
Plano, Texas. You have just won yourself a new hybrid. Congratulations, Jason. All right, Kenny, that's great. Thank you so much for your time today, and we'll talk to you next week.
Sounds good, Fred. Thanks a million.
All right, well, I've taken enough of your time listening to this show, and I'm going to wrap it up quickly with our closing quote. Interestingly enough, I got two quotes that are kind of similar, so I thought I'd share both of them with you. The first one came from Sean Houston in Layton, Utah. He quotes Gardner Dickinson, who says, "They say golf is like life, but don't believe them. golf is more complicated than that. And then Bob Hausman of Carlisle, Pennsylvania, he attributes Tom Watson to this quote, "Golf is not a matter of life and death. It's much more important than that." Please send your quotes, comments, suggestions, and requests to Fred at golfsmarterpodcast.com.